The 1954 U.S. Supreme Court ruling in Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas, was a defining moment in U.S. history. No issue has divided Americans more than racial segregation, and few events since the Civil War have altered the legal, cultural, and educational landscape of the country more than the Brown versus the Board of Education ruling. NPR News is airing a series of reports exploring the legacy of the Brown decision. Today we look at William Winter, former governor of Mississippi, a state which until 1982 did not have state-supported kindergarten in the schools. Diane Setzer's kindergarten class at the Davis Magnet School in Jackson, Mississippi. Children stick together futuristic contraptions out of marshmallows, gumdrops, and toothpicks. Some move numbers around on the floor to learn math. Some are collected on the floor in a corner, reading.
Happy birthday, Tom, said Papa. You are six now.
But this familiar American scene is not even a generation old in Mississippi. Until 1982, the Mississippi legislature did not support public kindergarten, in large part to prevent black youngsters from attending. Many white youngsters went to private school kindergartens, but African-American youngsters were not welcome in those classrooms. The absence of kindergarten in the public schools was part of a segregated system that made Mississippi backwards and often brutal. Writer David Halberstam, who came to Mississippi as a young reporter in the mid-1950s, still has harsh words for the state he remembers.
It was America's South Africa. We had apartheid. It was a closed society. Blacks were powerless. They couldn't vote. They couldn't be on juries. But whites were equally powerless unless you accepted the majority opinion. You could not dissent. You would be ostracized. You could have, in effect, night riders, white citizens' councils, or Ku Klux Klan driving you out of the state.
A whole generation of black and white Mississippians, including martyrs like Medgar Evers, eventually changed their state. But one man is given particular credit for persistence in reforming, really reinventing public education in Mississippi, William Winter. It took him until 1982 to bring Mississippi into 1954.
Behind me is a picture of the schoolhouse where I went to school. That was a one-room schoolhouse taught by my mother. There were 10 students through grades 1 through 6.
William Winter was the governor from 1980 to 1984. Today he sits in a high-backed blue leather chair that he got to keep for being lieutenant governor of the state in his office in a Jackson law firm that's strung with framed signed portraits of Presidents Clinton Ford and the first President Bush and some of Mississippi's great writers, including Eudora Welty and Shelby Foote. But Mr. Winter grew up on a farm in North Mississippi, where he remembers romping and prowling through the thick woods with his playmates, including black youngsters. But his black friends didn't go to school beyond the sixth grade.
The school bus would come out and pick me up and my white schoolmates and bring us to a good school in the county seat. My black contemporaries did not have a school bus. I never knew more than a handful of black students my age who were able to finish high school.
And may I ask, as you look back on it, when you were a youngster, did you just think that's the way life is?
I don't recall, Frank, in my early years there on the farm, reflecting on this as being an abnormal relationship. My parents did teach me to treat everyone with respect and with courtesy, but it was all in the framework of a segregated society. It was a way of life that I had inherited and which at that age I did not challenge.
Mr. Winter is 81 years old now. His handshake is strong and challenging. His hearing is sound. The pride he's felt in his family's native state is still palpable.
My grandfather on my father's side had been a Civil War veteran and represented the Old South. I grew up knowing him. I have sat on his knee and listened to him tell of his exploits as a 17-year-old Confederate soldier in the Civil War. So I grew up with him among my heroes. And I lived very close to those legends and stories and myths of the Old South.
In fact, Mr. Winter's middle name is Forrest, after Nathan Bedford Forrest, the Confederate general who later founded the Ku Klux Klan. But Mr. Winter revised his reverence for those legends after being inducted in 1943 and becoming an officer in the segregated U.S. Army that would win a war for freedom. He was assigned to Fort McClellan, Alabama.
Shortly after I arrived there, the Army engaged in a noble experiment. It started the integration of the white officer cadre. And then I found myself serving with black officers from all over the United States and came to have a very close association with them. During the week, we would share all of the facilities there on the military post. And then on weekends, we would get on the bus to go into Anniston, Alabama. And my black officer friends would have to go to the back of the bus. And it occurred to me then that there was something radically wrong with this system that saw men and women, just because of their color, discriminated against, particularly those who were getting ready to fight to defend this country.
Mr. Winter went to law school at Ole Miss after the war. He ran for the state legislature, where he served from 1948 until 1956, and found himself often allied with 11 other representatives who were interested in what now sound like moderate reforms: workers' compensation payments, relaxing blue laws that forbid showing movies and selling liquor on Sundays, and abolishing the poll tax that often discouraged even those blacks who could register to vote from actually casting ballots. Mr. Winter remembers how news of the Brown decision in 1954 shook the Mississippi Statehouse.
The immediate impact was one not unlike that which must have preceded the Civil War in 1861. Mm-hmm. There was a defiance, an anger, a frustration, a fear, mm-hmm. and the average white citizen's attitude was one that we must resist this in every way that we possibly can, short of another civil war. It was literally hysteria in the Deep South over the impact of the Brown decision. And it caused us to do some things that not only were inconsistent with our obligations of the American citizens, but it really set this part of the country back for a long time.
The Mississippi legislature abolished compulsory school attendance after the Brown decision. There was not a lot of competition among politicians to be a voice of reform. William Winter's determination to tear down the local laws that supported segregation and to speak out against acts of terrorism made him a target for some, but a beacon for others. Dick Malpas is now a Jackson businessman who went to work for William Winter. He grew up in the town in which three civil rights workers were slain in 1964.
I was from Philadelphia, Mississippi, which was the focal point of a lot of the civil rights activity in the 60s, particularly Freedom Summer.
That was where the
where Cheney, Swerdlin, and Goodman were kidnapped and killed. And William Winter was the only state official that was speaking out against that. And so I was just attracted to him, along with a lot of other young people. I worked for him when I was 14, 18, 22, 26, and he got elected when I was 29.
But only after Mr. Winter had been defeated twice for governor. His opposition derided him as a moderate. Fighting words among white Mississippians in the late 1960s. They ran ads showing him gasp, addressing integrated crowds with the heading, "White Mississippi Awake. William Winter's election will ensure Negro domination of Mississippi elections for generations to come." His loss in 1975 was historic.
It was the largest defeat any candidate for governor had ever suffered in a runoff primary, over 100,000 votes. After that election, I called my friend Julian Carroll, with whom I had served as lieutenant governor and who was elected governor of Kentucky that same year. Mm-hmm. And I said, "What did you do that I didn't do that enabled you to be elected governor?" He said, "What did you run on?" I said, "I ran on better education." He said, "That's where you made a mistake." He said, public education has no political constituency.
The state of education in Mississippi was famously poor at that point, for whites as well as blacks, but especially for blacks. The state was at the bottom of each measure of educational success. It had the worst high school dropout rate in the nation. Its per-student expenditure was half the national average. Mississippi was the poorest state in the nation. It had the highest percentage of African Americans in the nation, and they were barely represented in government. Dick Mulpas says this fact was reflected in the deplorable state of the schools.
It was a direct outgrowth of the plantation mentality that the best way to run a good field hand was to educate them. Yeah. Because then they would have higher expectations, want better pay, or heaven forbid, even leave the plantation and go to another city to seek their fortunes. Yeah. So it was very much, particularly among a lot of the older white members of the Mississippi Delta, where that patrician society still reigned, that education was a bad thing for our black children.
Mississippi had resisted desegregating its schools until forced by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1970. Many white families put their children into private schools that sprung up quickly. They were often called segregation academies, so the public schools remained poorly funded. The state didn't even require school attendance. Governor Winter tried to get an education reform bill passed in 1980 and 81, but it failed each time. Funding reforms required a tax increase, especially on the oil industry, which frightened many workers who made their living in Gulf of Mississippi oil fields. Still, as Dick Mulpas remembers it, by 1982, education reform was an idea whose time had come.
We got the public kindergarten bill out on the floor of the Mississippi House of Representatives. We had enough support, we think, to pass it then. The Speaker of the House, in a very controversial vote, adjourned the House right before we were able to vote on public kindergartens. There was
adjourned the House so the vote couldn't be taken.
So
we don't lose this to history. What was the name of the Speaker of that House?
C.B. Buddy Newman. Mm-hmm. That was the Speaker of the House, longtime Speaker from the Mississippi Delta.
Yeah.
Wielded power with an iron hand. And so it requires 12 people to have a vote, a roll call vote. Mm-hmm. And so we had probably 25 or 30 of our supporters were standing up on the floor yelling roll call, which is enough to create a roll call. And Speaker Newman looked at the audience, turned around, and walked off the podium.
The Speaker's iron rule seemed to rile many Mississippians. William Winter and his aides decided to use that public resentment to fuel support for an even deeper package of educational reforms, including compulsory school attendance, state-sponsored kindergarten, and teacher raises. They convened 9 public meetings across the state. The first was set in Oxford, Mississippi, home of Ole Miss, which the federal government had forcibly integrated 20 years earlier. Dick Mulpas thought that maybe 400 people would attend.
And as Governor Winter and I were flying in that night, we started circling Oxford. And as far as you could see, all the major highways coming to Oxford were packed. There were traffic jams of vehicles coming from other communities. We ended up with between 3,500 and 4,000 people there that night. Filled up the auditorium, we filled up the hallways, we filled up the classrooms, and we set loudspeakers up outside. And it was obvious we had touched a chord. Mm-hmm. Next night, we flew to South Mississippi, had 3,000 people. Everywhere we went, people were coming up and saying, you know, we are tired of our children not getting an education that's equal to other kids in this country.
Governor Winter convened a special session at the legislature to take up the Reform Act late in 1982.
We had over 15,000 phone calls and letters hit the state capitol the day that the legislature showed back up. It began December the 6th, and on December the 22nd, Governor Winter passed the Education Reform Act of 1982 intact as he had presented it. Bill Miner, who's a veteran journalist here, called it Mississippi's Christmas miracle. Mm-hmm. And we broke the back of the status quo in Mississippi forever that week.
William Winter had endured 20 years of defeats without getting discouraged.
Well, that's one thing that every aspiring politician has to understand. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things worse than losing. If you wait to be assured of winning every contest, you will win very few. And most contests worth winning are worth risking the possibility of losing. You have to remember, I had Mississippi had a one-term limit on its governors. And I was determined to make that one term count as much for as much as I could. I might not ever get the opportunity again.
William Winter did run for the U.S. Senate in 1984. He lost to a man he says he likes and respects, Senator Thad Cochran. He served on President Clinton's Race Initiative Advisory Board. Today, his law office sits within sight of the Mississippi State Office Building that's been named for him. David Halberstam spoke at the dedication of the William F. Winter Archives and History Building.
Well, I think there was a sense that America is not America and not complete as a country until Mississippi became part of America. I think the great thing about Bill Winter is that he not just modernized Mississippi, not just opened the windows and let air in. He made these significant steps in making America complete, in making Mississippi part of the Union, and thus we were finally on our way as a whole country to being this more just society.
Janaya, Chelsea, Imari, Michael, Terrell, Jerry.
But William Winter's legacy is visible in other places too, like Diane Setzer's classroom at the Davis Magnet School.
As one of my principals said when she hired me, I originally wanted to teach second grade because that's what I had done my student teaching in. She said, well, I have a little bit lower grade for you to teach. And I said, okay, what grade? She said, kindergarten. And I said, okay. She said, well, just remember, it's a garden, and we're blooming these children. And that just has always stuck with me, you know, that these children are here to bloom and grow, and just amazing how they do.
There are nearly 40,000 children enrolled in public kindergarten in Mississippi today. Our story was recorded in Mississippi by Ted Mebane and produced by Sarah Beyer-Kelly. For more on our series on the legacy of the Brown ruling, you can come to our website, npr.org.